You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special Fight Hunger Bowl preview edition of the Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we hate hunger.
So we're getting ready for UW versus BYU in the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl happening on Thursday in San Francisco. Is this UW's first appearance in the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl?
I can't recall
any. It's the first time that we hate hunger.
I've always suspected that I hated hunger, but it's good to just confirm it. The real loser will be hunger here.
And so a pretty good matchup. We're going to dive into breaking down the game, UW versus BYU, and then also talking a little bit about the impact of Keith Price and his career.
His legacy.
So where do we want to start with? Let's start first by talking about BYU on offense. Let's get going.
A very run-heavy offense from BYU. Their quarterback, Taysom Hill, is their leading rusher this year. He's not as effective as a passer. He's only completed 54% of his attempts.
Yeah, I mean, passing is really, if you think about it from UW, they're wanting to force Taysom Hill to pass the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you want to get him in third and long.
At 54% and 13 interceptions to 19 touchdowns, they run the ball so effectively, but if they're unable to run the ball for UW, getting Taysom Hill, throwing the ball could mean big plays, and it could mean a lot of punts.
Which they've had a lot of on the season, as you'd expect with that kind of low completion percentage. There's nobody in the Pac-12 that is inaccurate a passer that was a qualified starter this year as Taysom Hill. So the closest comparison, I think, that UW saw this season is probably Arizona. They're not as dependent on one back as Arizona is on Kadeem Carey, the All-American. Hill obviously playing a big role in that in the read option kind of style, and then Jamal Williams is their leading rusher.
Yeah, I think Jamal Williams has had a really solid season. I mean, having both Jamal Williams and Taysom Hill and then their third running back, Paul Lasicki, over 5 yards per carry is pretty solid. It means that they're gaining a lot of yards on the ground. I'm actually kind of wondering why BYU's offense hasn't been better this season. Is it just because of Taysom Hill passing the ball?
I think it's inconsistency. They've had sometimes, I mean, they ran all over Texas in the game that got their defensive coordinator fired. So we've seen them be very effective at times, and then they've struggled at other times.
As tends to be the case.
As opposed to other teams, which are great all the time.
Yeah, the one thing that I was noting about BYU when checking them out and looking into them is that their offense, yards per carry-wise, looks really good, but they have a tendency to put up these real stinker of games. I mean, they have games where they scored, 13 points at home against Utah. They lost to a really bad Virginia team, 19-16, and their offense just isn't getting anything going for them.
Well, I think the other thing that enhances this is, you know, I mentioned the comparison to Arizona, but what makes them different is that Rich Rodriguez favors a short passing style, kind of similar to what the Huskies have been doing, whereas BYU is more boom or bust in their passing game. The yards per completion is relatively high. You've got Cody Hoffman averages 16.2 yards per completion. One of their secondary receivers also averages, Mitch Matthews averages over 17 yards per catch. And those guys both have a lot of long touchdowns on the season, but when those passes aren't there, that's going to be a lot of three and outs, that's going to be a lot of short drives.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you have to think of an NFL team to compare them to in the Carolina Panthers, right? So they're a good running offense. They're picking up a lot of yards on first down and second down, it looks like, and being in a lot of third down situations. But if they're not completing third down short passes and they're throwing deep on third down, which I think is something that Ron Rivera and the Panthers were criticized for doing early in the season, taking too many shots, if they're not being able to pick up fourth downs and having a Riverboat Ron style, they're going to be punting the ball a lot.
The other comparison I would make for Taysom Hill is to Jake Locker. Another guy with a low completion percentage was very good at completing the deep ball during his UW career, and obviously very effective as a rusher. So I think there's some similarity there. And, you know, we saw that at times that could be very frustrating, that style with Jake Locker at quarterback. One of the other interesting things about BYU is they've gone to a no-huddle, up-tempo offense, same as UW this season.
As many teams in the country have, yeah.
But the difference is everybody here was super excited about the up-tempo style. There, it's been widely criticized. They think it's a factor in why Taysom Hill has played so poorly.
Well, here's another strange thing, is that teams who tend to move to up-tempo offenses tend to run the ball a lot, right? I mean, a team like Oregon, you think of them, and they're like, they own the ground.
Yeah.
But if you look at BYU, Taysom Hill, especially in these two rough losses against Utah, was 18 of 48. I mean, there's no reason in a game that's relatively close that he should be throwing the ball 48 times, especially when they have an effective ground game. And then against Virginia, he was 13 of 40. I mean, obviously, you have to look at how bad the completion percentage was in those games. But also, why is he throwing the ball in a game that was 19 to 16 and they led most of the game? Why is he throwing the ball 40 times?
I mean, I think part of that probably gets back to if you're having success stopping the run, you're forcing them into passing situations. But that also seems to be a play calling issue.
I mean, that's a really strange trend for BYU, and obviously you would hope that continues against UW. And UW with a really solid secondary, I mean, Taysom Hill is not going to complete a huge amount of passes against UW.
So I think game plan-wise, you know, the Arizona game will be a little bit similar, although that was tough to really take too much from because the conditions were so bad that day that It was very difficult to do anything. The other one, I think, it's kind of like the Stanford game where UW did a good job of loading up against the run and taking that away from Stanford, and they fell victim to some long passes, you know, the touchdown to Ty Montgomery most memorably, but eventually we're able to really hold that Cardinal offense in check. I think that's going to be a similar game plan. We'll see if there are similar results.
It's true, and another thing that happened in that Stanford game, which was the failures on special teams, which is something that could come back to affect the Huskies here. BYU has Adam Hine, who's averaging 27.8 yards per return on kickoffs, and you have to make sure that you're not letting him get free and giving BYU a short field.
Although, fortunately, they're not very good in special teams overall. They're rated 89th in the country by Football Outsiders FEI. UW has improved a lot since that Stanford game, getting more starters out there. They're up to 44th in the country.
That's good. I mean, that's an area that you always have to be concerned about.
And I would say special teams could be important because you can't expect the Huskies to pile up a lot of points against this defense.
No, I mean, the BYU defense has been really effective this season. It's definitely their strong suit. Looking at their schedule from the last year, every single one of their opponents except for one, the Houston Cougars, they held to less than their season average of points. Now, a little of that is biased because a lot of college teams are playing bumpkin games and running up a lot of points, but if you look throughout the season, they held Wisconsin to less than their season average, they held Notre Dame to less than their season average, Georgia Tech in a really good victory for BYU, and Texas.
Yeah, they rated 12th in the country by FEI, 16th by S&P, so no matter how you look at this, this is a top 20 defense in the country, and probably one of the best that UW has faced all year. They run a 3-4, and Kyle Van Noy from an outside linebacker position is kind of a rush end, is their star player, potential first-round draft pick this year. He has 15.5 tackles for loss, only 4 sacks, not a ton of those, but makes a lot of plays in the run game.
That's interesting. I mean, you would think since UW has so many different weapons that they'll be able to find something to exploit in that BYU defense. But you have to wonder, with all of the turnover that's happened in the UW coaching staff, do you think that the play calling will be generally similar? Because a lot of the play calling was coming from Coach Sark.
I mean, I don't think you're going to change your philosophy. It's not been unsuccessful. It's not like this was a coaching change because the team was struggling. So I think it's going to be similar. But, you know, Sark has that years of experience. He knows what he wants if it's a 3rd and 5. And the one question you have to have is, will that be an issue with the up-tempo offense? Because that accelerates the timetable for trying to make those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, something about Coach Sark, and again, this is the last time we'll have to really think about Coach Sark a lot until we play USC, but there's something about the feel that he has for the pace of the game, where he's been offensive coordinator and calling plays for so many years, and who's going to be calling this game?
I assume Eric Kiesau will be handling this.
It'll be Kiesau. It's not going to be Tui, right?
I don't think so.
Tui will be serving as making the more general decisions, though.
Yeah, he's running the team, and that's one of the interesting wild cards about this is, you know, a very new experience for Marcus Tuiasosopo and for UW. I mean, I think it's good to have that continuity with him on the sidelines, but you never know what it's going to be like in a bowl game like this where your coach has left and there's a new regime getting ready to take over, but they haven't been hands-on in preparation for this game.
It's an interesting situation. It's a situation UW hasn't really faced very often because most often the coaches have been fired and you're not going to a bowl game.
That's true.
But seeing if everything runs the same, I would assume that they'll still rely pretty heavily on Bishop Sankey, and I would assume that most of the plays will be really similar, but I think it'll be more magnified when we're paying attention. So looking at the UW offense, obviously we know quite a bit about it, and it starts with Bishop Sankey.
Yeah, I mean, he's your bell cow, and after a month off, I think you're really going to probably try to ride Bishop Sankey in what might be his last game at UW. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get upwards of 30 carries again.
And that would put him at 336 for the season. That's quite a bit for somebody going into the NFL. I wonder if that's something that the NFL will be paying attention to.
We've seen much bigger numbers. I mean, I think that, guys at Michigan State, I think Le'Veon Bell had a bunch, Javon Ringer before him. So it's not uncommon.
Javon Ringer, that's... and his illustrious NFL career.
Well,
I'm just saying it turned out well. but another thing that we saw in the UW offense is they started throwing the ball really deep a lot at the end of the season last year. Or this year. It feels like last year.
It does feel like last year. Yeah, and I think that was partially a function of personnel. And, Taysom Williams is very good in those intermediate routes, but Kevin Smith is probably even better as a deep threat. They were using him a lot at the line of scrimmage early in the season, but he became much more of a deep threat after Taysom Williams' injury, and then that also was effective with DeMaurier Stringfellow.
Yeah, I would expect the wide receivers to get a lot of action in this game, Bishop Sankey and the wide receivers, but I wonder also if we're going to be looking at Austin Seferian-Jenkins more.
That could be something that was a focus to make him a bigger part of the offense during this, because you have had several weeks of practices here where, it's effectively like a bye week in terms of what you could potentially add into the offense.
Do you think that he would have gone to Eric Kisau or Tui and said, I'm thinking about leaving, is there any way that you could include me more in the offense? Is that a crazy thought?
I'd be surprised by that. I mean, I think that they're aware of his potential decision, but I'd be surprised if that's something that he's actively talking about.
I mean, a big game here could make a pretty huge difference for his decision either way. Having a signature game in your last game against a really good defense and a really good linebacking core could look really nice to NFL scouts.
Absolutely. I'm sure a lot of eyes on this game. It's one of the better matchups before New Year's Day, I think, of all the bowl games.
Yeah, having two teams who are very, not similar in style of play necessarily, but similarly matched between two teams. When you look at their rankings and some of the advanced rankings, FEI, UW is 17 and BYU is 21. They're both kind of in that just second tier of teams.
Yeah, and some of the better teams that were again shut out of the really major bowl games. So it's the combination of both two quality opponents and an evenly matched game that you don't necessarily see all the time in bowl season. I think neither team is really disappointed necessarily to be here, which is sometimes potentially an issue with bowl games. You've still got the weirdness of the interim coach with UW could be a factor, but I think that I expect a pretty good game.
It's also really interesting because you've kind of got UW, which their strength is their offense, BYU, which their strength is their defense, and then vice versa. So you kind of have strength on strength in this game, which is kind of exciting to see. And in the Pac-12, most often we're seeing strength against weakness because they all have these powerful offenses.
Well, sometimes that colors how you perceive them because of the fact that they're all playing against each other and it looks like the defenses are maybe worse than they are. One of the other things that's interesting to watch for me is how the Pac-12 was going to fare in bowl season. They were, I believe, at one point favored in all nine games they were going to play.
They're 1-1 right now.
2-1. Yeah. Very dominant performance by Oregon State, dominant performance by USC. Washington State, the lone, and they seemed to be cruising to victory until they fumbled that game away last Saturday. But so far, so good, I think, for the Pac-12 in terms of showing its superiority in these matchups where they're facing off against, I think lesser teams because of the fact that you don't have two teams in the BCS.
It'll be a nice consolation to play well in bowl games. I don't know if it'll mean anything long term, but only having one team in the BCS seems kind of ridiculous in a year where the Pac-12 had its best season in as long as I can possibly remember.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And then only in the Rose Bowl, you're not playing in any of the other, not in the national championship game or something like that. So it didn't work out well for the Pac-12 beating each other up.
It's an unfortunate thing about college football. I mean, the other question that you have to ask about this, and it's something that I ask more and have talked about constantly this season, is just what does this mean? What does a victory here mean? What does a loss here mean? Part of it feels like, and I think USC really had this feeling, they're just ready to move on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be totally different if it was Sark was coaching this game. Then it's, if you win this game, it really cements the positive direction of the program after being stuck on 7 wins the last 3 seasons. At this point, it doesn't really tell us much about the future of the program. I think probably the biggest long-term impact of this game is how it affects the decisions of guys to potentially go to the draft.
Absolutely. I mean, it would be nice to set that benchmark of 9 wins, but it also means that Chris Peterson is coming in with more pressure for next season.
Yeah, which almost is a negative in that sense.
If UW picks up 9 wins this year, he needs to win at least 9 games next year. It seems like it won't be necessarily that hard because of an easy schedule or an easier schedule than we face this season and getting a lot of guys back, only a couple seniors leaving, but it sets that as the new level. That's the new standard, whatever we just did.
I don't know. I think that there's going to be less focus on that right away. I mean, I think people are going to understand, especially in a situation where you're losing your starting quarterback, your 3-year starter.
And losing your starting quarterback, losing probably a significant chunk of your staff, and then obviously your head coach.
And possibly your running back. I mean, again, all of this expectations will be set. Like, if Bishop Sankey comes back, expectations for next season are totally different than
super
if he goes
high
to the NFL.
And then you also look, one of UW's strengths, especially on defense, they're pretty strong at every unit, I felt. But the secondary had a really good season this year, and you're losing Sean Parker, 4-year starter, and kind of the first big recruit of the Coach Sark era.
Yeah, and then also Greg Ducre, one of your starters at cornerback, and the nickel corner, Trey Watson. So that's a lot of depth to lose in that area.
I thought Trey Watson had a really good season. I was asking you if there's any chance that Coach Peterson would move Shaq Thompson back to safety.
I'd be very surprised by that. I think that, you know, he's had so much success in this kind of hybrid role where he's sort of a linebacker, but you're sort of playing nickel all the time. I think that that's one of the reasons that UW has been so good against the pass this season is that they haven't needed to completely alter their personnel to match up with different teams. They've been able to keep that base unit on the field most of the time.
Yep. So next year, Marcus Peterson is left. Marcus Peters is left, and he had a great season, so it'll be exciting to see him if he develops into kind of an elite-level corner.
Oh, I've heard that he's actually considering changing his name to better, you know, get along with Coach Peter.
Marcus Peterson with an E.
Yeah.
Common opponents for UW and BYU. UW played Boise State early in the season, obviously. Both teams beat Chris Peterson.
Yeah. UW's a bad difference for Chris Peterson.
UW won 38-6, BYU won 37-20, and then also Idaho State. We played the state of Idaho.
Yeah.
UW beat Idaho State 56-0. BYU beat them 59-13. Nothing really much to take from either of those common opponents.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing against a team like Idaho State, sometimes this final score ends up mostly being a product of how much do you want to keep your starters in?
Yes.
What are you working on
when
at the end of the day? And that Boise State game, as impressive as UW's performance was in that opener, it really wasn't as dominant as the scoreboard made it look. I think, you know, and BYU ended up winning pretty comfortably as well. So fairly similar, I would say, in terms of that. It reinforces the fact that this should be a pretty close matchup.
So to me, one of the main things that I think that we'll need to look for, and what we have to say deciding factors and big points in the game, is which BYU offense shows up. Is it the BYU offense? In their wins, they've had a much better completion percentage, not particularly terrible completion percentage in wins. In their losses, most often, Taysom Hill has thrown the ball 40 times and completed less than 20 passes. So that's going to be a huge factor, which BYU offense shows up. If the evil BYU offense shows up, I think UW would win very easily, to be honest. And then if the good BYU offense shows up, it's going to be a real strain on that UW defense.
I mean, to me, that's a product of two things, which is first, containing the run on first and second down,
yes,
and second, taking away or limiting the big plays. So if you've got a potential low-scoring game, like a lot of their losses have been, you know, 27-17 with Wisconsin, 23-13 against Notre Dame, 20-30 against Utah, one touchdown in those games is a huge deal. So if you get beat on the edge as a corner in one-on-one coverage, maybe you just grab someone and take that 15-yard penalty and force them to score against you as opposed to giving up the touchdown. I think that's the kind of thinking you have to have.
It's true. Yeah, that was an interesting thing that I noted. BYU, they're not out of any game. You know, UW has a couple of huge losses in there. They played some more elite opponents. But even their toughest losses have been by about 7 points, and then 10 to Notre Dame and Wisconsin, both on the road.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be the kind of game that it's probably going to be. I see a final somewhere around 24-17, 24-20, somewhere in that neighborhood.
It'll also be interesting to think, Justin Wilcox, I mean, potentially not coaching for his job. His job at UW seems pretty in flux right now, no matter what. But Justin Wilcox coaching to demonstrate what he can do, potentially even to a team that's not UW or USC.
potentially, there's been rumors of Oregon in that mix. So, yeah, it's his last chance to really make a statement before he moves on to whatever's next, whether it's at UW or somewhere else.
And I would assume defensively that UW will load up that box, get Aitman in the box, and really force Taysom Hill to throw the ball.
I think that's got to be the strategy. And the other thing you need is, it's not a situation like Stanford where it's sheer numbers and strength against the run. It's really discipline and making sure you're staying at home, playing your responsibility. It's very much like facing an option offense.
And so that might be a good thing because they face the UW offense all year, the UW defense.
Yeah, although they had, well, probably with the scout team, I guess they have seen that kind of running threat with Siler Miles out there with the second team.
Yep. And also having a full month to prepare for it. I mean, you have to know that Justin Wilcox has been really enforcing this and that defense that you need to stay home.
Absolutely.
I mean, despite all the influx that's been happening, despite everything that's been happening, I'm sure that these last few weeks when it's been mostly focused on practice rather than everything else, I think that that's something that he's really reinforcing. Any other deciding factors or just chances of victory?
I mean, I feel like the UW offense is going to do what the UW offense does. I don't know that there is really a deciding factor there, so I think it's really primarily contingent on what the defense does, and possibly a big play or two in special teams.
I mean, I think if the UW offense can function like it can, if it does what it does, then UW would win, to be honest.
I tend to agree with that. So I think maybe 60% chance.
60%. I feel the exact same way. They're two pretty good teams. I think that having the strength on offense is a little bit better than having the strength on defense. I think that UW can really load up the box and force Taysom Hill to throw the ball. And if that happens, I would predict he'll have at least one pick, maybe two. And turnovers could be a pretty big factor there if they're forcing him to. And then also just a ton of punts coming from BYU.
And potentially from UW as well. The other thing is both these teams play up-tempo. You're going to have a lot of plays in this game.
It's going to be a lot of plays. When you look at the games that Taysom Hill threw the ball 40 times, they also have running backs running the ball like 35 times.
Yeah, there's going to be like 80, upwards of 80 plays.
It's so different than when you look at Seahawks box scores.
Yeah.
Where you combined their running that many plays.
It's a big adjustment.
So, and then let's talk about Keith Price. It's his last game as a quarterback at UW. He was another big Sark recruit. He was the first quarterback that Sark brought in, and somebody who he kind of attached himself to his entire tenure here, really. And so obviously had his first game starting at Oregon and then took over the next season for Jay Clocker. He's been a 3-year starter since then.
I can't think of anybody in Husky history that I've maybe pulled for as much as I pulled for Keith Price, because he's had to deal with so much doubt about first the transition from Jake Locker to him, and then his rough season he had last year. And, you know, he's never really, I think, won over the hearts of Husky fans, and that to me is wildly unfair, because I think he's had a really good career when you stack it up. He's going to finish his career near the top of the Husky charts in terms of yardage and touchdowns. He's the all-time leader already in touchdowns, obviously. And also the highest completion percentage of any Husky quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, for things that I look for in a quarterback, completion percentage is number one across the board. I mean, I think about it a lot from an NFL perspective, and completion percentage is the biggest decider, probably, of NFL success. And seeing somebody like Jake Locker, and we like Jake Locker. Jake Locker definitely did win the hearts. He had the things that fans tend to be really attracted to. Which
is the classic. He's the paragon of a quarterback in terms of he's 6'3" and runs really fast and has a rocket arm. It's all the classic measurables.
They're probably equally frail, to be honest. But Jake Locker is somebody who... Jake Locker, I believe, missed more games than Keith missed. But Jake Locker is somebody who would play so physical that when he was getting injured, it was because of these big hits. When Keith Price was getting injured, it wasn't necessarily because of that. But I think fans are really attracted to that. A quarterback who's out there running and bowling guys over.
Absolutely. It's just kind of the classic for the position, whereas, you know, Keith Price is kind of skinny. He's been banged up most of his career, which has affected his ability to run. He hasn't been that effective.
Hasn't run the ball at all in his career, just a few scrambles.
All he does is sit back there and complete passes.
I mean, that's exactly what I would be looking for in a quarterback. It's what makes Russell Wilson so much better than the other quarterbacks that he's being compared to also, is the super high completion percentage.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison between the two. I mean, obviously, Price is not as effective as Russell Wilson has been in the NFL, but, you know, they're somewhat similar stylistically.
If he could run the ball, it would be a little bit different. Keith Price is not somebody I describe as elusive.
So I did some statistical research before we had this conversation and looked at sportsreference.com stats for Husky quarterbacks, which go back to, I think, the late 70s, basically, they have stats for this. One of their main stat is yards per attempt and then adjusted yards per attempt, which also factors in touchdowns and interceptions. And Keith Price has the highest adjusted yards per attempt of any quarterback that for which they have stats at 7.7 ahead of, stunningly, Isaiah Stanback, number two at 7.2.
I always liked Isaiah Stanback also.
Me too. But you also have to then account for era. Because this year, the average Pac-12 quarterback had 7.8 yards per attempt. Keith Price was better than that this year, obviously. Whereas, you know, if you look at even, you know, a couple decades ago, it was in the sixes. So we've seen a dramatic evolution in the ability of college teams to pass the football. And that's part of what has to be factored into that. So I looked at each quarterback's adjusted yards per attempt relative to their era. Number one on that list is Billy Joe Hobert. Was 7.7% better than average. Number two is Tom Flick, who started briefly after Warren Moon and had some really good numbers for that period in time when passing was not very good. Number three, Mark Brunell, the other quarterback of the 91 team. And then number four, Keith Price.
That's really interesting. And I think you have to look at somebody. So the quarterback who came before him and you were saying won the hearts and Jake Locker is near the bottom of that list, not dead last. Jake Locker and Damon Heward, who are two probably the most beloved quarterbacks in the last 20 years at UW.
The other interesting one that stands out to me on this is I think people will compare Keith Price to Cody Pickett in terms of putting up big numbers but not on teams that achieved great success. But Cody Pickett really, when you look at it from this perspective, was not that effective. He was 7% below average in terms of adjusted yards per attempt for his period of time. So he played in a time when not only was there a lot of passing in the Pac-12, but he just threw tons of passes because the UW didn't have the same kind of running game that it has now with Bishop Sankey. So in terms of yards per attempt, he didn't actually do that well, even though he's the all-time leader in rushing yards. The other thing that Keith Price does, never throws interceptions.
Yeah, this season, only 5 interceptions. That was actually way less than I thought it was.
Yeah, the lowest interception percentage of, or Stanback actually has the lowest. He's number two in terms of lowest. But, you know, that's a big difference between him and Cody Pickett. Cody Pickett threw 200 more passes, but has 50% more career interceptions than Keith Price does.
That's really interesting. So, a question about Keith Price. How much of his super high completion percentage do you give credit to Coach Sark?
I think some of it, but I think that's really more, again, in the context of the general evolution of college football passing. So, you know, I think we're accounting for it here. I think the bigger factor is maybe that he has always had a really strong running game to rely on. So it's not like, you know, Brock Heward doesn't come out very well by this rankings, but his junior year, his last year at UW, he was playing with no talent whatsoever because everyone
was a running back
to
then?
The NFL.
Rashawn Sheehy, was he gone?
No, Rashawn Sheehy was gone, so I forget who even was carrying the ball that year. I mean, they were very young. They ended up doing well by the time Tuiasa Sopa took over as starter. I think you had Willie Hurst was probably in there. Maybe a young Maurice Shaw.
But it's really interesting to see Keith rates so much higher in that stat than Brock Heward and Damon Heward. I mean, Husky legends like Chris Chandler, Warren Moon, Sonny Sixkiller. Do you think that he'll be perceived in that same echelon long term?
I don't think so because of the lack of Rose Bowls. I think that's probably the biggest factor that's going to hold him back.
Do you think that beating Wazoo twice will be a factor there?
It's a positive. It helps. I mean, but then again, the fact that he threw the interception at the end of the one loss to Wazoo, that's, you know, one of those plays that stuck out from people in people's minds, along with the interception he threw at the end of the Boise State game last year in last year's bowl game.
And then also never beating Oregon.
Yeah, which goes back a lot longer than Keith Price, I laugh. Yeah, I mean, I think those factors are probably going to hurt him along with, you know, the style of quarterback that he was. But, I came up with my personal rankings, and this is of Don James' era, basically, and beyond. We don't have really good stats for the Don Heinrichs and the Bob Schlaretz of the world.
All right, start at number five.
Number five to me is Billy Joe Hobert. He gets penalized for the fact that he didn't play a very long period of time as the starting quarterback, and he was also playing with a ridiculous amount of talent around him, which I think was part of his success, but
he also gets penalized for the fact that we hate him.
There is that. That's a small factor. But you can't deny that he was the starting quarterback on the team that won, shared the national championship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number four?
I put Price number four. I think that's probably about where he belongs. he's one of the better quarterbacks in UW history. Not quite at the very top.
He's not going to have the same kind of wins that all the other quarterbacks had, and it's unfortunate that he played for UW during this era. It may have been, since he wasn't a very big recruit, Keith Price coming in, he wasn't like a top 10 quarterback.
No.
He might not have ever started for UW in an era where they had elite level talent.
The one thing that surprised me is how poorly these quarterbacks come off in general. And we always think of UW as quarterback U because of the NFL success these guys have had. But UW's only had one quarterback be all Pac-10 first team in the last 30 years.
Really? Who was that?
Marcus Tuiasosopo.
Really? Okay.
And before that, it was Steve Pelor in 1983 had a really big season.
And there is a lot of NFL success. I would say that Jake Locker is probably a better NFL quarterback than he is a college quarterback.
I think that's true of a lot of these guys. I mean, Damon Huard, like we said, didn't rate very well, but played, you know, over a decade in the NFL. Chris Chandler, like another guy who's behind Keith Price on this list, very effective NFL quarterback for a long period of time. So,
okay, so number three.
Number three, I went with Warren Moon. Won a Rose Bowl. Very effective as a runner. He's just behind Keith Price on this adjusted yards per attempt for era. And his junior year was not that good, but his senior year was terrific. He was also the Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year as a senior. That's something that Tui is the only other guy to do, and Plore the only other guys to do since.
And we really like Warren Moon.
He's
the exact opposite of Billy Joe Hobert.
The difficult thing in ranking these guys is so much of it is colored by their NFL success. I mean, Warren Moon was such an amazing NFL quarterback, a Hall of Famer.
NCFL quarterback.
NCFL, yes. But that it's sort of, you know, it extends retroactively back to his college career.
Absolutely.
He's held back a little bit by the fact that he only played 2 years at UW.
Wait, so his first year was as a junior, and he didn't play particularly well, but then he had a monster senior year?
Yeah.
Okay, number two?
Number two, I went with Mark Brunell. Again, not a ton of time on the field, because he only started his sophomore year and then the second half of his senior year after Billy Joe Hobert got suspended, although they split time before that. But very effective as a passer, number three in these adjusted yards per attempt, and then also a huge running threat as well. And, I maintain that if Mark Brunell was healthy, we never would have heard of Billy Joe Hobert, and Mark Brunell would have been the starting quarterback. They would have gone 12-0 just the same.
Pretty amazing that they had two of your top five quarterbacks during the same season.
That's how you win national championships.
That was a good year for the Huskies, I think.
Brunell, another guy who had an incredible NFL career, not quite as good as Warren Moon's, but a Pro Bowler, a very good starter for a long period of time.
And Billy Joe Hobert, of these quarterbacks, everybody else has played in the NFL. Well, let's go with your number one first, and then we'll talk about that.
He played in the NFL, but...
Did he have no success, really, in the
not
NFL?
Not really. Ended up on the same team as my number one guy, which is Marcus Tuiasosopo. I think has to be the choice. Again, mentioned the accolades. Is a passer, not as effective as some of these other guys, but he was such a threat in the triple option and such an incredible leader. All of those factors go into it. We also never really got to see... I can only imagine what it would have been like if he would have gotten a fifth year if he had been able to redshirt his freshman season and had to come in relief of the injured Brock Huard. We're seeing Keith Price as a fifth-year senior right now and see the development he made from his fourth year. We never got that chance from Tui, who might have, been a legitimate Heisman contender if he had another year. He finished eighth, as it was, in 2000.
So this is interesting. You're statistically minded, right? And Marcus Tuiasosopo is not as good of a runner as Jake Locker.
No.
Not as good of a passer as many of the quarterbacks on this list. And where does he rank? 10th among all these quarterbacks in adjusted yards per attempt?
Yeah.
How can you rank him number one?
Because it's the combination. Like, Jake Locker is much farther behind, so his running benefit doesn't help him as much as Tuiasosopo's. And then, I think that they're... Defenses loaded up against Tui in a different way than they did, against some of these teams. He didn't have a great individual talent around him on offense. I mean, maybe you could say Rich Alexis, but even Alexis was not nearly as effective after his freshman year when he was playing with Cody Pickett. I mean, he had good talent around him, but not... There wasn't a Bishop Sankey. There wasn't an Austin Seferian Jenkins, or I guess Jermyn Stevens would be the one guy who would qualify in that list, but... He had a makeshift receiving core those couple of years and still led UW to within one win of back-to-back Rose Bowls.
It's true. I mean, Keith Price is playing with a lot of talent right now, right? He's playing with five-star recruit Kason Williams, five-star recruit Austin Seferian Jenkins, Bishop Sankey, who's maybe the best running back in UW history, and then before that was playing with Chris Polk, who we thought UW could never replace.
But really, everything the Huskies did with Tui was centered around him, and I think that's reflected in the accolades he earned, All Pac-10, Offensive Player of the Year, you know, things like that.
It's true. He was the team when he was here. That was the word. I learned how to spell Tui Asisopo. But Keith Price is more a facilitator for everybody else, right? It starts with Keith, and it goes out to everybody else. He's not doing everything himself in the same way that Tui was.
But he also was an important cog in that. You know, that system is not foolproof, and he executed it very effectively. Yeah. But this also indicates why we're so excited to see Tui coach a game tomorrow.
Yeah, that's really cool. Keith Price also doesn't have a Rose Bowl victory like Tui has.
Yeah, I think that's the things that, in terms of legacy, that, you know, when you think of Marcus Tui Asisopo, you think of winning.
I mean, I probably think of Keith Price a little bit higher than you, but I like so many quarterbacks on this list. Isaiah Stanback and Keith Price, love those quarterbacks.
That's the one thing that stands out. Isaiah Stanback is wildly underrated in Husky history.
There were
people calling for him to get benched his senior season.
Crazy. He was the first quarterback that UW had when I had season tickets, and granted, they went 0-12 not too long after that, but they were a pretty good team for a couple years there that just happened to get destroyed in a lot of football games.
Well, you know, I talked about this in my blog post about the Sark era and how he gets too much credit, I think, for going from 0-12 to a bowl game in 2 years, because those Stanback teams were pretty good. And his senior year, I mean, they had won, I think, 3 or 4 games in a row. There was the big win at Arizona. Then USC had a situation where they spiked the ball and the time ran off the clock, should have had 1 second to run one final play to try to tie that game at USC during the midst of Pete Carroll's glory days.
Yeah.
And then next game, Stanback gets injured against Oregon State, is out for the season, and things kind of fell apart from there.
Yeah. Anything else on Keith Price?
I think that wraps it up. I mean, I just really, I'm so glad that he's had the senior season that he had. I'm glad that he came back to win the Apple Cup in the fashion that he did, because, you know, He's proven his doubters wrong time and time again, and I hope he does so one final time.
Absolutely. It'll be really interesting as we go forward, and we'll talk about the draft, obviously. It'll be really interesting to see if Keith Price gets a chance in the NFL.
I think he's a guy who's a late-round flyer type of pick.
He's somebody who's beaten a lot of odds to get here, to get to this point, to be one of the better quarterbacks in UW history, and I think he's got a prototype West Coast NFL build and resume.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, well, thanks for listening to this bowl preview, and enjoy the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl.